The Dead Side of the Mic by Simon Brett. Dramatised by Jeremy Front.
Charles!
Charles,
there's a semi-naked woman in my sitting room.
Semi-naked or half-dressed?
Is there a difference?
There's a sexual overtone to semi-naked, whereas half-dressed sounds dull and workaday.
May I remind you, there are house rules while you're living under my roof.
I haven't broken any house rules.
Sex in the sitting room?
Thanks, but can I finish breakfast first?
Talk about midlife clichés. You're old enough to be her father.
Hello. Mrs. Double Standard's in the house.
Meaning?
Meaning you and the toy boy loft converter.
Toby is not my toy boy, and you're only threatened by him because he's young, muscular, and has a PhD on the Bauhaus.
A doctor of philosophy shouldn't have biceps like grapefruit. It flies in the face of Nietzsche. Do you see what I've done there?
I'm not in the mood for your jokes.
In the bathroom, as if I need to ask. I can't believe you'd have a one-night stand under the same roof as your unborn grandchild.
Her name's Steph.
I've seen her in her underwear. It's a bit late for formal introductions.
He's like a teenage boy with a hormone rush. It's pathetic.
It's a midlife crisis.
His entire life's a midlife crisis.
Ah, Steph. Welcome to the Whitehall farce I call my life. Let me introduce my estranged wife, Frances, my unborn grandchild, and my daughter, Juliet, also known as the hanging judge.
Morning.
Hello. Charles was worried for my safety last night and insisted I spent the night on your sofa. Were you all right in the loft?
Me? Yeah, I can sleep anywhere.
And frequently does.
Well, isn't this nice? Toast, anyone? Steph and I have been trying to find out what linked the untimely deaths of her flatmate, Annie, and American music producer, Danny Klinger.
Move right down inside, please.
Then the previous evening, Annie's ex, Jamie, was hospitalised after a suspicious accident, and I thought Steph might be next on the list.
How come you live in the same house as your ex?
It's complicated.
Only I got the feeling Francis thought there was something going on between us.
Ridiculous.
Why ridiculous?
For a start, I'm old enough to be your father.
That's true.
Steph was a blunt, straight talker, so I decided to take the same approach and flirt truthfully and honestly. And you're a highly intelligent, talented, attractive woman with your whole life ahead of you, whereas I'm staring into the dark abyss of decline, death and eternal nothingness.
Also true.
So much for truth and honesty.
On the other hand, you're not dead yet.
Thanks for noticing.
And we all need a frisson of excitement from time to time.
She squeezed my leg as she said this.
A little variety and diversion.
Squeezed it quite hard.
The sting of pleasure to remind us we're still alive.
Really, very hard indeed.
Is this my stop? Call me.
As a member of the BBC drama rep, I'd been booked to do Alan Titchmarsh's With Great Pleasure, but was too early for the run-through, so I popped into the BH Club for a pair of doubles.
Morris Scanlon Associates.
Pixie, can you put me through to Morris, please?
May I say who's calling?
It's Charles.
Oh, sorry, Charles, didn't recognise your voice. Bring you through.
Thanks for getting back, Charles. Here's the situation. Woody's thrilled you want to do it, and he's got Alan Alda and Goldie Hawn. It's going to be great fun. They're emailing a schedule and biking over your scenes, but he never gives out the whole script.
Well, that's fine.
Charles?
Yeah?
Dance?
Paris.
Oh, crap.
I thought you picked up quickly. It's good to hear your other Charles is doing so well.
What can I do for you?
I was wondering if you'd chase that sitcom.
Sitcom?
The BBC Three show.
Yes, I know. Just remind me?
They offered me The Incontinent Granddad.
Ah, and you passed on it in a manner of speaking.
Then I changed my mind and you said you'd go back to them.
I will have. I have.
Morris.
I'm on it, Charles.
I know it's not a Woody Allen movie, but this is my career we're talking about. This is my bloody livelihood. So when you tell me you're going to do something...
I'm all over it.
Yeah, right.
My lips to God's ear. You're an important client.
Oh, yeah.
Look, I wasn't going to mention this, but I've had a bit of a health scare.
Oh, I'm sorry, Morris. Really, I didn't realise.
I didn't want friends worrying about me.
I don't want to pry, but...
Downstairs.
Oh, right. Is there anything I can do?
No, they say I'll be fine, and I promise I'll get onto BBC Three today. It's best I keep busy.
Yeah. The previous night, Annie's ex-husband Jamie narrowly escaped death in the drama effects store. With time in hand, I went up to snoop around and try to figure out how he ended up crushed under a stack of shelves. To a man brought up on the Goons, the radio sound effects department is irresistible. The storeroom was deserted, but someone had been busy putting the shelves back up and getting the place in order.
What are you doing?
Bloody hell, Tom. Creeping around like that.
Guilty conscience.
Where have you been hiding?
Nowhere. I just heard someone in here. Come on, let me help.
Despite his untimely affair with Annie, Tom had got me this job on the radio rep, and I couldn't help liking him.
What are you nosing around for?
Well, I was just thinking how tidy it is in here, considering what happened last night.
Yeah, I heard about that. The idiot was probably pissed and pulled him down on top of himself.
He'd have to have been trying to scale them.
Maybe he was. I don't know, and frankly, I don't care.
You really don't like Jamie, do you?
Just because the Pranit's in hospital, I'm not going to start pretending I think he's a great guy, because he's not, and I don't.
Because of the way he treated Annie?
Yes, because of the way he treated Annie.
Then again, if she hadn't divorced him, she wouldn't have hooked up with you.
Well, that's life. A series of random events and meaningless coincidences. Order from chaos.
You don't remember her mentioning an American called Danny Klinger?
Nope. Why?
She tried to meet up with him in New York. I think she dug up a story on him. Then just after Annie died, he was found dead in a London car park.
Oh, and Poirot thinks there's a link.
Once a crossword junkie, always a crossword junkie.
I gave up looking for neat answers years ago. The whole of human existence could be summed up in one bumper sticker. Serendipity happens.
If only Tom hadn't written that threatening letter to Annie, he'd be off my list of suspects. I wasn't sure if it was serendipity, but on my way out of BH, I found myself in the same lift as cross-platform media superstar Edwin Palmer.
Ah, well, if it isn't Charles Paris, we must stop meeting like this. People are talking.
I was surprised and a little flattered that a high-earning star remembered a humble actor from the rep.
I caught your breakfast show today.
Did I get away with it again? Only I worries. Oh, how I worries.
What have you got to worry about?
When it might all end, same as everyone else.
Oh.
You're in the biz, you know how fickle the public are. Not to mention our paymasters.
Yeah.
There was a vast chasm between me and Palmer, but how could I not be charmed by my newest, bestest friend's ingenuous honesty?
Tyrants they are. Robber barons the lot. One wrong move and it's thank you very much and good night.
It was true that the Media Hall of Fame was littered with the dead careers of one-time stars destroyed by their own egos or good old-fashioned scandal.
It's all built on sand. It's all an illusion. Smoke and mirrors. That's all my life is. Smoke and mirrors.
After the run-through for With Great Pleasure, I forewent lunch with the Titch and instead legged it over to visit Jamie in hospital.
I wasn't expecting to see you, Charles. News travels fast on the old BBC grapevine.
Actually, Steph told me.
Oh, well, you can give her the bad news that I'm still alive.
You do her a disservice.
Oh, she's never forgiven me for marrying Annie.
I think it was more the extramarital affairs. Life has taught me it's generally thought to be bad form to sleep around once you're married.
That sounds like the voice of experience.
Don't even go there. So how are you feeling?
Oh, you know, bruised and battered, but not too bad considering.
What actually happened?
I'd been feeling a bit iffy, which I put down to the tuna salad I had at lunchtime.
Scromboid.
Sorry?
Scrombotoxic poisoning. I had it once from a tuna mayo sandwich I'd left overnight on a bedside table.
What is your life like?
You really don't want to know.
Anyway, I'm in the effects store about 7:15. I suddenly get this stabbing pain in the gut. I'm sweating, giddy, and next thing I'm being carried out of BH on a stretcher.
I suppose you felt faint, grabbed the shelving, and it crashed down on top of you.
I was woozy when I hit the ground, but I was still conscious.
Well, then how did the shelves come down?
Well, they didn't blow over in a breeze.
Was anyone else in the effects store at the time?
God, you know how big it is. It wouldn't be difficult to sneak in and hide if you wanted to.
Well, who'd want to do you harm?
Yeah, well, Steph, for one.
At 7:00, I was having dinner with her in the Goldhawk Road. There's no way she could have got there in 15 minutes.
How quickly does that tuna poisoning kick in?
Usually pretty fast. It hit me like an express train. How long was it between your salad and the pain?
Well, I had an early lunch, so five and a half hours.
And nothing in between?
Nothing.
An SM who doesn't snack on hobnobs?
I like to buck the trends.
What about drinks?
Only water.
Bang went Tom's theory that Jamie had been drunk and pulled the shelves down on top of himself.
I drink 1.5 litres of mineral water every day. It's good for the skin. Tell a lie, me and Edwin had a coffee after lunch. I need the caffeine to get me through a nightmare edit.
Why a nightmare?
Oh, the producer was in a filthy mood, kept snapping at me, blaming me for everything that went wrong. I mean, he even complained when I went for a piss.
Which producer?
Tom McLeish.
With Great Pleasure went well, And Alan even gave me a few Titchmarsh tips about patio plants to ingratiate me with Francis. Then, after the recording, I met Steph for a drink at the Shackled Man, a louche watering hole loitering in an ancient alley near the old Bridewell prison.
Why do you keep looking over your shoulder?
Well, I just feel a bit out of place.
You're not that old.
It's not my age, just my lack of leather and piercing.
You can borrow my jacket.
On you, it looks good.
This is my urban emo grunge rock chick look.
I've only got one look.
On you, that looks good, but I like to play different roles from time to time.
Well, to me, that's work.
So what happened with Jamie?
Well, he thinks someone tried to kill him.
Who?
You.
Me?
Don't worry, I convinced him otherwise. It looks like he was drugged, and then someone tried to crush him and make it look like an accident.
Belt and braces again, like Annie.
Yeah, and Klinger. And, of course, there's a third person in the equation.
Who?
Tom McLeish.
You said he wasn't capable of murder.
Well, who knows who's capable of murder? I just thought it unlikely.
Past tense.
Shortly before he collapsed, Jamie was editing with Tom, who seemed angry with him.
So now you think Tom killed Annie and Danny, then had a go at Jamie too? Suddenly he's gone from a crime of passion murderer to a serial killer.
Tom's very vocal about how much he hates Jamie for the way he treated Annie.
Would he be that vocal if he intended to kill him?
Well, it could be a double bluff, designed to make himself look too obvious a killer to be a real killer.
It's too many ifs and too clever for Tom. And I still don't see how Klinger fits into all this.
Jamie reckons Annie got Klinger's contact details out of his address book.
So, where did Jamie get them?
That is a very good question.
The coiting moment approaches. He's clumsy.
No one was home when I got back, so I improvised a quick meal and settled down to watch Badgers on BBC Four having more sex than me. Someone's in a jolly mood.
Oh, I've had a jolly evening. Why does it smell like an Orkney fish smoker in here?
The Anglo-Indian Raj meets New Orleans in my sweet and smoky Cajun kipper kedgeree.
And are they happy bedfellows?
Well, it's a bit like chain-smoking a duty-free sleeve of Capstan Full Strength washed down with a jar of honey, but we experimental cooks learn from our mistakes. Where's Juliet?
Out.
I assumed that was her with you.
Hiya, Charles.
Toby and I went out to celebrate the end of the loft conversion.
And I'm glad to say the plumbing's all in working order.
Bit too much information.
In the new ensuite.
Oh, right. So where did you kids go?
The White Cube.
Really?
A friend of mine's done a new installation, so we went to the private view.
And we had a few free drinks.
Good installation, was it? All properly installed by a qualified installation installer?
Charles doesn't get contemporary art.
I get contemporary art, providing it falls loosely into what one might call art, rather than a collection of half-baked derivative and blindingly obvious ideas rehashed from Marcel Duchamp roughly a century ago.
Like I said.
I better get off. I want to bring the rocking horse round tomorrow.
Ah, the famous handcrafted rocking horse.
I hope Juliet's going to like it.
Night, Francis.
Night.
Enjoy your new bed.
He's not staying to enjoy it with you?
Oh, please.
Least he can do is tuck you up, or is he going to give you a ride on his rocking horse?
Oh, give it a rest.
I wouldn't blame you. He's bright, good-looking, and built like a Palladian privy. If I wasn't so hidebound by boring old heterosexuality, I'd fancy him myself.
Well, he doesn't fancy me and I don't fancy him, so don't let me stop you.
Not my type.
He's got a pulse and a backbone.
Oh, she's hot tonight.
Oh, good, rowing for a change.
We're not rowing.
This is us breathing.
Being somewhere nice.
We went for a curry.
Another one?
A girl in my water birth class said it can help bring on labour.
Never has with me.
Who'd you go with?
Actually, it was with Miles.
Oh,
right.
You didn't ask him in?
I didn't think he'd be very welcome. Well?
Well, what?
Aren't you going to ask what we talked about?
Certainly not. It's none of my business.
Francis and I had a pact that neither of us would say a word against Juliet's alpha male arse of an ex, Miles. That way, if she went back to him, we'd at least have the reassurance that we didn't drive her into his big hairy arms.
What about you, Dad? No snide remarks?
You must be thinking of another dad.
If you must know, we talked about me, the baby, and whether or not we had a future as a family.
Uh-huh.
Is that it?
We trust you to make the right decision, don't we, Francis?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Right. Well, I'll go to bed then.
Night.
Night-night. I can't keep this up much longer.
If I grit my teeth any tighter, I'll be through to the bone. Tell me she wouldn't be stupid enough to have him back.
She wouldn't be the first intelligent woman to fall for the wrong man.
I took this as my cue to turn in before things got really personal. Next day, I had a coffin and a spit in a woman's hour drama set in a donkey sanctuary. But unlike the central tragic donkey, I was free by lunchtime. On my way out of BH, I was surprised to see Jamie coming in.
That's a very fetching neck brace.
I told them there are patients who need the bed more than me.
Very charitable.
I also wanted to reduce my chances of MRSA.
Still hurts.
Only when I breathe. Anyway, I've got an appointment with the union rep about claiming compensation, so...
Before you go, there's something I meant to ask you yesterday.
Yeah?
You went out to New York before Annie, and you met up with Danny Klinger.
So?
So who introduced you to him?
When I was producing Edwin Palmer Live, he kept phoning the studio, and I picked up so many times we got chatting. You know, he said if I was ever in New York to look him up.
Why did he keep phoning the studio?
To speak to Edwin.
Edwin?
Yeah, said they were old mates.
More wine?
Thanks.
Steph wasn't a challenging, experimental cook like me. On the other hand, her food was edible.
So you reckon Jamie and Klinger met through Edwin?
Informally. Klinger kept phoning the studio and Jamie kept answering.
And it makes sense that Annie got his details from Jamie's address
book. But what would make her want to meet him?
It wasn't his music. Annie wanted to be a tough hack exposing bad guys. She wasn't after a job on the NME.
Anyway, Fat Freddy reckoned Klinger's music operation was bankrolled by LB's drug scam. And LB had gone long before Annie arrived in New York.
The elusive LB.
She must have sniffed around and dug something up.
Oh, I don't know about you,
but I think better in the morning.
Oh, I didn't realise how late it was. Let me help you clear up and then I'll go.
You could help me in the morning. One good turn deserves another.
Oh.
You know, people get uptight about older men and younger women because they think the man's playing power games. But that's just lazy gender stereotyping. I mean, maybe the woman's taking advantage of the man.
It has been known.
Can I be straight with you?
I thought you always were.
I like you.
I like you too.
Some men find clever women a turn-off.
Not me. When I was 10, I had a pin-up of George Eliot over my bed.
People like us think too much. We intellectualise everything, but in the end, life's simpler than that. Hot, cold, good, bad. Pleasure, pain. Let's go to bed. The bedroom is the crucible of raw emotion.
Who said that?
Me.
Oh.
After you.
The room was in complete darkness, and before my eyes had a chance to adjust...
Charles.
Can we put a light on?
I prefer candlelight.
As my sight returned, I noticed everything was black. Black walls, black ceiling, black floor, all dominated by a vast black bed, and hanging from the Gothic iron bedhead, highly polished chains sparkled and twinkled by the light of black candles.
Don't take this the wrong way, Steph, but...
Ow!
Call me Miss Demeanor.
Set me free, little girl. All you gotta do is set me free.
Oh, God.
Morning.
Whoa! Oh.
You're very jumpy.
Well, I can't think why.
Toast or cereal?
Have you got any antihistamine?
Still bad.
Puffed up like a balloon.
It was an immediate reaction.
Yeah, well, how was I to know I was allergic to PVC? And apart from the anaphylactic shock, I'm not good at sex under pressure. I've never been good with authority figures. I just prefer plain old vanilla to a raspberry split with whipped cream and crushed nuts.
I assume that's an ice cream analogy. Anyway, you're never too old to try something new.
You said I'm old. It's nothing to do with age.
Raw nerve.
I'm just uncomfortable with the whole role play thing.
You're an actor.
I don't act in bed. OK, occasionally Stanley Kowalski, but never for less than equity minimum. I mean, who am I talking to now, Steph or Miss Demeanor?
We're all multiple personalities, Charles. You're not telling me you haven't got a private and public face.
Yeah, but mine are so close you couldn't put a fag paper between them.
Well, you're lucky you've got illusion in your work. Some of us need to put on an act in private.
Illusion?
That's what I said.
Smoke and mirrors.
What?
Have you got a computer here?
While I scratched wheels into the rash which was heading north up my torso, Steph went online.
Edwin Palmer, I feel lucky. There you go. Lawrence Bryan Edwin Palmer.
Yes.
What?
Come on, Steph. Lawrence Bryan.
LB!
Half an hour later, Steph and I were in BH, waiting outside the studio of Edwin Palmer Live.
What do we do when he comes out?
My plan stopped at getting to Broadcasting House before he came off air.
Oh, brilliant.
So what does Mr. Mina suggest?
I suggest we call the police.
But it was a bit late for that.
Yeah, cheers, Al. Thanks for that, eh?
Hi.
Good show. Yeah. Hello again, Charlie boy. Oof, what happened to your face?
I've got an allergic rash. Good show.
I think I got away with another one.
Just like LB.
Sorry?
That's it. That slightly frozen smile on your face. The same smile I saw the other day.
This is all very enigmatic, but I'm...
You were
in
the studio when I was in the box with Jamie.
So?
We were talking about Danny Klinger's death, but you overheard us. You made out you were going over your script, but someone had left a talkback mic open and you heard everything. And then you tried to kill Jamie and you'd probably have come after me and Steph next.
You're out of your mind.
You've already murdered Annie Gower and Danny Klinger. Why stop there?
You know, that rash looks nasty, Charles. Does it hurt, eh?
Oh, God, don't let him get away. Go on, get after him, Steph.
Steph,
after
or
him.
Mr. Mina, was a surprisingly good runner. And I finally caught up with one or both of them on the sixth floor.
He's in the drama effects store.
Oh, great. Deja vu. Go and call the police.
I already have.
Okay, wait here.
Why?
This could be dangerous.
It's less dangerous for me than you. I'm younger and faster.
Ageist.
Sexist.
Okay, when we go in... Stay behind me and no heroics.
I cautiously opened the door and we went inside. Someone had blocked the way with the classic serial period door.
I know you're in here, Edwin. Annie worked out you were LB, didn't she? Edwin Palmer, media darling, selling lethal junk to kids who didn't know any better.
Wait here.
Where are you going? Steph.
You're out of your depth, Charlie.
Annie wanted to make a name as a journalist. And you were a breakthrough story, so you killed her and tried to make it look like suicide.
You'll have to do better than a cuckoo clock.
Oh, God. Hi, Juliet. I can't speak right now.
I'll call back later. When Klinger discovered LB was Britain's latest show business man of the moment, he started phoning the BBC to blackmail. And he turned up in London, so you arranged to meet up and killed him too. Who was next on your list, Steph or me?
The day is young. You want to know why you'll never make it in show business?
I've got a lousy agent.
The great British public don't like a smart ass.
I'll pass that on to Stephen Fry next time we're having a backgammon all-nighter.
While you're at it, give him this!
If only I'd paid more attention the previous night when Steph had wrestled me onto her bed, or what she called the couch of submission. Typical, isn't it? There's never a dominatrix around when you need one.
That's for killing my best friend, Mr. Palmer. That's for being a really irritating broadcaster.
After a stiff drink at the Drum and Monkey, I got home and fell over a rocking horse in the hall. Aided by Mr. Bells, I regained my composure, then noticed a hastily scrawled note stuck to the rocking horse.
In labour, gone hospital. Oh, bucker.
Frances had arrived minutes before me, and I found her in the maternity waiting room in tears.
I wasn't there when my mother died, and now after 9 months of preparing and fussing, my own daughter was all alone for her first baby.
It wasn't your fault. It wasn't either of our faults.
What's happened to your face?
It's a long story.
You can go through now.
Thanks.
Oh, thank you. Hello, darling.
Mum, Dad, meet your new granddaughter.
Oh, she's beautiful, Juliet.
She is, isn't she?
I won't intrude on a family moment. Just wanted to say congratulations.
Toby?
I went round to deliver the rocking horse.
And he ended up delivering a baby.
Hardly. I just offered moral support, really. Juliet did all the hard work.
Oh, Toby! Let me give you a kiss.
I thought I knew every trick, but delivering a baby in order to bed the grandmother was a new one in my book. A week later, my rash had gone, and there I was, strumming my old Epiphone semi-acoustic and settling into the new routine of dysfunctional happy families. It's suspiciously quiet round here.
Juliet's out with Olive.
Is that definite? I mean, no one's called a child Olive since on the buses.
She's to be pitied. Olive pitied, get it?
This is our grandchild.
Trust me, this is the best. At the peak of her hormone, she was toying with Gaia, Seacole and Boudica.
Hello?
Hiya, Gramps.
Oh, Morris, I've been thinking about you, but I didn't want to bother you.
Oh, that's very considerate. Anyway, I'd better cut to the chase. It's bad news, I'm afraid.
Oh, Morris, I'm so sorry.
Oh, these things happen, such is life.
I don't know what to say.
In the end, they went with Trevor Eve.
What?
The BBC Three sitcom.
I thought you meant, you know, downstairs.
No, they reckon it'll clear up of its own accord.
Really?
Verrucas often do.
You said you had a health scare, not a verruca.
I scare easily when it comes to my health. Sorry, Charles, can I call you back? Someone on the other line.
Oh, one of these days, so help me.
Oh, hello, Juliet.
Mum, Dad, I really appreciate you giving me some space, but I've had another long talk with Miles and I've come to a decision.
Well?
Juliet, she won't settle. I think she needs a feed. Oh, hi, everyone.
I'm going to marry Toby.
That's great!
I can't keep up.
I, or rather we, have also decided to call the baby Angela, after Grandma.
Angela Olive.
Oh, come here, both of you.
So there I was, Grandpa Charles Paris, sitting in an armchair, settling into early late middle age, guitar on one knee, baby on the other, wondering if it was time to slow down.
This is so lovely, all of us together.
Well, it's certainly novel.
I think I'll mow the lawn later.
What?
Might even go into town, buy a cardigan.
Don't overdo it.
I really want Angela to know what it's like being part of a family.
I think that might be a good thing all round, don't you, Francis? Oh. Yes.
Charles, me again. Bad time.
Some of us do have a family life, Morris.
Charles, the baby's just been sick on you.
What? Oh, no.
Then you wouldn't be interested in playing the mature Ray Davis in a new show about the Kinks?
Would you take the baby for a moment, Juliet?
Oh, right, yes.
Funny enough, I've been practicing the old guitar. OK, I was older. But I never said I was wiser.
In The Dead Side of the Mic by Simon Brett, Charles Paris was played by Bill Nighy and Francis by Suzanne Burden. Juliet was played by Tilly Gaunt, Morris by John Glover and Tom McLeish by Nicky Henson. Steph Kennett was Emily Raymond, Edwin Palmer, Chris Pavlow, Toby, Paul Ryder and Jamie, Alex Lanipeckham. The Dead Side of the Mic was dramatised by Jeremy Front and directed by Sally Avens.